New York is such a fast-paced environment, and we're trying to slow it down. You know, in life, we got to slow down. We got to enjoy it a little bit more. And I hope that, you know, when people come into Margaritaville, they feel that.
Hey, Bomb Squad, you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm your guest host, V Spear, the host of Under the Desk News on TikTok, filling in for Carrie Diamond, who's on vacation. We're coming to you from Newsstand Studios at Rockefeller Center in the heart of New York City. Today's guest is Chef Natalie Cohey, who has one of the most unique jobs in New York City. She's the executive chef of the brand new Margaritaville Resort in Times Square. Natalie is the daughter of restaurant owners, went to Le Cordon Bleu in Arizona, and has worked for a number of oceanfront resort properties. The Margaritaville Resort in the heart of Times Square is a 32-story tower featuring 234 guest rooms, a heated outdoor pool, five distinct restaurant concepts, and a two-story Statue of Liberty raising a margarita to cheers escapism and signal it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Inspired by the music of Jimmy Buffett, the father of what he calls drunken Caribbean rock and roll, the hotel caters to his loyal fans, where parrot heads can indulge in the infamous cheeseburger in paradise, cold draft beers, and of course, the perfect margarita. And we'll hear all about that in just a minute. First, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Free People. Who doesn't love Free People? So chill, so stylish. Don't miss the Cherry Bomb Free People Summer Supper Club collab, featuring food stylist Mariana Velasquez and chef Tara Thomas. Head over to the Free People's YouTube channel for Mariana and Tara's plant-based recipes and to learn their tips and tricks. See how much style these two bring to the kitchen. That's the Free People on YouTube. Little housekeeping. The next issue of Cherry Bomb is currently in the works, and the issue is all about cooks and books. It's a celebration of the season's best cookbooks, food memoirs, and all things print. If you're a print nerd or a cookbook collector, or you just need some new recipes, don't miss this issue. You can subscribe to Cherry Bomb magazine at cherrybomb.com and get 2 issues a year delivered direct to your door. Now, here's my interview with Chef Natalie Cohey. Chef Natalie Cohey, thank you so much for taking time out of Margaritaville to come down here and answer some questions for us about the new property. I'm so excited to get to chat with you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So we're going to get to the dope-ass property that I got to visit, the Margaritaville in Times Square. But first, I wanted to ask you a little bit about yourself. Just, you know, tell the folks at home who maybe haven't had the chance to get to know you before, where'd you grow up? Where are you from?
I'm originally from Indianapolis, Indiana. So I'm a Midwest meat potatoes type of girl. Mm-hmm. I grew up pretty much my entire life, you know, kind of in the country, you know, campfire, bonfire, that type of atmosphere. My parents had restaurants growing up, so I did spend a lot of time within those establishments, kind of working, you know, slepping away on the floor, dishwashing and all that. I got my luck into culinary, you know, going to Le Cordon Bleu in Arizona. Mm-hmm. After that, I went to Scottsdale and worked at some of the prestigious restaurants in Camelback Mountain in Scottsdale, Arizona. After that, I did my externship in Sunset Key. And that's where pretty much my passion really grew. I got to do the Latitudes private restaurant in Latitudes Beach Resort, which is owned by Hilton mm-hmm. back then. And it's a small, eclectic Oprah Winfrey. Everybody had a house there.
Wow.
So that's pretty much where I kind of dove into it, worked under a phenomenal chef there that kind of gave me my passion to growing up into the industry and kind of set the foundation of my life. And then at 19, I got the opportunity to become the first executive sous chef with Sheraton in Key Largo. And since then, it's just been an ongoing adventure, you know, within the culinary world.
That sounds like an adventure. You go from like landlocked Indiana gal with parents in the restaurant industry to super hyper prestigious beachfront restaurant.
Absolutely.
Was that part of the plan?
You know, it's funny because when I did my, in culinary school, you had to do like create your own restaurant, create your business module, do whatever right. you want, you know, just make a restaurant within, you know, as part of a final. And I actually did it for Key West and opening a small little Shake Shack, like not Shake Shack, but it's like a taco shack, but it's mm-hmm. the same vision of like a beach bar meets, you know, tacos. It was called the Happy Shack. And it's funny because just right after I completed that and aced that entire building of a restaurant, I was offered the externship to go to Key West. And here, I've never been to Key West. I really didn't know much about Key West, but I'd created this business module, and then to get the opportunity to end up going to Key West without applying or anything, it's like full circle. Like the world just kind of like knew that was the destination that I was supposed to be in, was getting to go into the islands and work that like island Caribbean lifestyle. So, you know, I never thought I was going to be on the beach. I always thought it was going to be like Montana or, you know, working in Colorado or something in around ski resorts, but completely opposite. Got to go to the Caribbean pretty much.
Were you cooking as a kid even? Was this an early passion?
You know, with my great-grandmother, we used to cook and roll like homemade noodles and things like that. You would find me a lot like playing around and making pastries and desserts and things, but that wasn't my passion. That's just what, you know, your parents usually let you make cookies and brownies and things like that. So those were simple things. Later on, my mom and dad, you know, they are not in the, you know, we owned restaurants, but that was like their hobby was to open up the restaurant. So for them, it was like, you know, sitting out there barbecuing and inviting friends over. That's kind of where we, you know, all got together and did our, you know, learning how to cook and things like that. But you know, most of it was just, you know, your typical, you're in the kitchen, your mom walks, you walk past your parents and you see what they're doing. And that's kind of like what drives your creativity and experiences, I guess.
Was there any dish you loved making with your parents or from childhood?
You know, we have a family recipe we've always done, and it's turkey noodles, like homemade, rolling it out, making chicken stock and all that. It's pretty much been a staple from my dad's side forever, from all that I can remember. Like every time we always want to do something, it's like, let's make turkey noodle stew. Like it's always turkey noodle stew. And that's one thing that is my comfort food. So like when I came to New York, the first thing I wanted to do was just like, you know, get a bowl of turkey noodle stew and start eating it. It's just the signature comfort for me.
Will we see like a turkey noodle stew taco someday maybe?
See, that would work. That would work. It's always usually right after Thanksgiving is when we start it off. So it's like you take the carcass that's left over and anything, it goes into, the turkey goes for everything. And like the last thing we end up making is turkey noodle stew because it's like, okay, we have had enough of turkey. We've got to, you know, get rid of the turkey. So
that's, I'm going to shake you down for the recipe for that afterwards. So when you were at Le Cordon Bleu, tell me a little bit about what the experience of, you know, this is a women's food podcast. Mm-hmm. What was the experience of being probably one of the few women in that school working at the level that you were and sort of fighting for your space?
You know, it's always will be, you know, and I think it's kind of turning the corner now as a, you know, it was always a man's dominated field, which, you know, you have to have thick skin. I think whenever you get into that, you got to kind of, you know, put your foot down and just say, you know, I'm here for the same reason you're here. You know, in the beginning of it, it was a little intimidating, but, you know, I was more of a tomboy. I you couldn't, you know, rough me up that hard. Like, I could take it. It was fine. I spent a lot of times with some of the chefs there, the instructors, and, you know, with working next to them every single day, they just showed it. All it takes is hard work and dedication. Just set your mind to it, really. The rest of it, it doesn't matter. I don't care what the person next to me think. You may not like my food. I'm okay with that. But somebody does. Right. Obviously, you know, I've made it this far. Somebody does. And in culinary world, it was a lot of people like, you know, you're not good enough. You can't do it. You know, they're, you know, I was young going into it right out of high school. A lot of them, this is, you know, a second career for them. And you find that a lot of times that when they're going into culinary school, it ends up being somebody's second choice, or, you know, they could never get their foot in the door. So now they're going to culinary school to try to make this their next round. For me, it was right out of school. I wanted to go to culinary school. So I did it, and, you know, I was young there, you know, I was 18, and everybody's in their 30s and 20s. So they looked at me a lot as, you're just a young one, you'll probably be weeded out. Well, lo and behold, I ended up being one of the strongest ones. And with that, that's where I got the opportunity to go to Key West, where they only took five. So out of those five, four of them went to Maine, like actual Hilton, and worked in the kitchen there, versus I got lucky enough to go over to Private Island Sunset Key. And getting that opportunity pretty much paved the course of where I ended up now. Not many people got that luxury. There was no other externs that were allowed to actually go to Sunset Key and work on the private island at that time. Now, I'm sure there's many that have transpired over, but usually you had to start at, you know, Hilton Mainland and get your luck to go over to Sunset Key. Fortunately for me, within the day one, it was like, we're going to send you over there. We're short staff. And I never left. I don't know what it's like when they had to go over to Hilton and slept away for all the banquets. I got to do all the eclectic fun stuff. So that, you know, that passion, that drive that I had was pretty much instilled upon me, you know, the rest of my life. Like, you know, just show up to work, you know, be ready to work, drive hard, you know, dig in and, you know, just work. You know, it's, we're all here to do a job and let's get it done. But it's definitely harder, you know, as a female to get going. But fortunately, you know, I want to say it's, some people say it's luck. I just say it's dedication.
Yeah.
Know, really.
And mentorship sometimes as well. And you had a really strong mentor young as well. Do you want to talk to me about Chef?
Yeah. So I've actually had two. Chef Peter was probably my number one. He, you know, spent almost 16 years at the same company. And when you spend 16 years with the same company, you're doing something right. Some can say, oh, you became complacent. But others look at it, you know, especially in the culinary world, as you're doing something right for you to last so long and do good things, you know, travel the world and get to see things and open up new hotels. You're doing something right. And for him, he always was like, Danley, all I can ask you to do is show up to work every day, ready to work. You're going to have bad days. You're going to have miserable days, but be honest and have your integrity, number one. Mm-hmm. Don't lose focus of who you are, because people are going to try to change you. They're going to tell you, you know, the food that you're doing is not, you know, suitable for the guests that we have. Stick to it, because that's what you know. But adapt to change. You know, we're constantly changing. Culinary world is constantly changing. But at the end, stick to your roots, but also, you know, put a little bit of the new, you know, new world twist onto things. But you have to, you know, remain focused onto who you are. And with that, it's, you know, kept me to where I'm at right now. So
yeah, we've heard that a couple times this week as I've been filling in for Carrie. Every single chef guest has said how important it is to know your food, because we've had, you know, folks from Top Chef on, different competitions, different restaurants moving around. And the idea is, like, if you don't really solidly live in what your food is, you can get lost. You can get completely swept away.
Absolutely.
So what is Chef Natalie Cohey's food?
You know, my favorite is barbecuing. Like,
yeah?
I would like to spend all day sitting out there by a campfire, you know, smoking ribs and roasted chicken. My signature, just my known to, is everybody's always asking, oh, let's make ribs. Let's smoke ribs. It's just something that I've always enjoyed. And it's probably because I come from Indiana. You know,
yeah.
You know, we got cows everywhere. It's meat, potatoes, and corn. So that's majority of the time, that's what I'm usually making. Anything to do with outside. And I like to be around family and friends. So the best way to do that is host a party and sit there and out by the pool or on the beach and just barbecue it out.
Grill
anyway,
it out.
Anything, I'll take it. I'll do it.
Do you have like a secret spice blend you like to put on your ribs?
You know, I definitely like dry rubs.
Dry rubs?
So I'm a big fan on dry rubs. I like really smoky hot. I'm a big spice person, so I enjoy the heat. But always finishing it off with something a little sweet and tangy, usually, if I'm going with spice. So
dig that. Yeah. We've been talking also about summer cooking a little bit, and we're going to get into specifically what you did with the restaurant in Margaritaville. But what's like your go-to summer dish?
If I'm going to do like my go-to summer, usually it's something like kebabs, fish, you know, I do love like a whole roasted, you know, throw a whole fish on the grill.
Yeah.
You know, we
That's
did
brave.
A lot of this past summer before opening up Margaritaville. Actually, last summer, we spent a lot of time out on the boat. So catching whole fish, throwing it out there on the grill, you know, that's kind of my go thing. You make tacos or whatnot.
Yeah.
That's, you know, things that I kind of gravitate towards.
That sounds so fun.
It is fun.
Going back to Sunset Key for just a quick second, you said that, like, you know, Oprah has a house out there. All these folks have a house out there. What was it like trying to cater to that type of clientele with such specific food requests and trying to get it out in mass? Like, what was the day like there?
You know, the day, it's having to know each day that the clients are always going to want something different. What you think that they want every single day. I mean, a lot of the times they do ask for the same request. But then the next day they're like, you know, I had the filet this time, but you know what? Now I want no spice, or, you know, I want this done a specific way. It's just being ready for change, always on your feet. Mm-hmm. Constantly things are changing, and you have to, like, they'll tell you in the morning, hey, you know what? We're going to go get sea bass. This is what we want to have for dinner. And then an hour before service, they're like, nope, we changed our mind. We have so-and-so guests coming in, and that's not what we want anymore. So you've got to be quick thinking, and you have to be ready for change at any moment. And it was hectic fun. It's like you never knew what you're really walking into, because what you think you planned for, it was never going to happen. It never turned out the way that we thought it was going to be. Because unfortunately, you know, they're paying guests. They can change their minds.
Sure.
They can do whatever they want.
We'll talk about what Margaritaville is as a menu, but what is it as an experience? Like, when the guest is coming through the front door, what is Margaritaville on like a sensory mental level?
You know, what we want is when you walk into the door is to feel like you're on vacation. You know, we have so much stress in this world, whatever walk of life you're coming from, it's stress. So when you walk in the door, you want to feel like you're doing an escapism on a vacation. Whatever destination you choose to come to in Margaritaville, the most important is when you walk in that door, the sense of, I can just take a breath. I'd have to let everything go. I don't have to worry about what's going on outside of the world. Just come in, enjoy, listen to the music, watch some of the shows that are going on. You know, that's the most important thing, is just to get that fresh of breath air within our establishment and feel like you're on a vacation.
You personally, though, are not on a vacation. You got 5 restaurants within this property.
Absolutely.
Should we start with one and go through them, or do you want to talk about them as a collection?
I mean, I can kind of run down them.
Yeah,
obviously, the most important and the biggest one is Margaritaville.
Right.
That's what we're known for. That one is our biggest restaurant. It has 2 floors. So you can seat almost 500 people within that establishment. And it's beautiful because we have the Statue of Liberty sitting there holding a margarita glass, basically cheersing off to 5 o'clock, you know, 5 o'clock somewhere where everybody knows about. And then you're going to go to Landshark, which has the only outdoor 365 day pool. It is heated. We just opened that up last week. So it's officially open, hanging over, you know, Times Square. Nobody has that here. And it's one thing, you know, for me, I love it because Landshark is known for being around beaches. Unfortunately, we don't have a beach here, but it is an island, Manhattan. So they did put the pool outside so you can kind of escape out on the pool deck drinking, you know, changes of latitude, Margaritaville.
When I went to that 6th floor pool, it is the craziest thing. You're just like truly sunbathing and swimming and then also in Times Square, like seeing the Broadway posters off the side of the wall.
It's a crazy, completely different what you would envision.
You can't even believe you're in New York anymore. It was a very, very cool experience. So we've got Margaritaville, then we've got the Landshark Grill, and then up on the 32nd floor, we've got a different kind of escape. Yeah. What's going on the roof?
That is 5 o'clock somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's where you're going to want your sundown. I want to watch, you know, come after work and have cocktails with the coworkers or, you know, bring a date night. It is probably one of the most breathtaking views. Unfortunately, I don't see it at nighttime. I actually go there first thing in the morning. Usually it's the first place I kind of go and just have a coffee. I go up there when nobody's there. I'm the first one in the building. So it's my fresher breath air in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, instead of like having to go straight in the kitchen and getting ready for the grind, I go up there and I watch the sunrise. And just get to see all of New York before the hustle and bustle starts. So I love it up there. Even at nighttime when I am there actually helping out and getting it set up, I'll go out there right around sundown. And when the sun's setting, it's probably the most beautiful view that you could see within the establishment that we have. You get to see both sides. You know? So for me, it's
bougie up there.
It is bougie. We
it's
have
ritzy.
Some nice food up there. The drinks, the cocktails are all craft cocktails. They're all specialty. We brought in our own mixologist to do that and paired with charcuterie and cheese boards. We have Wagyu sliders, ceviche, tuna tartare. So it is more of a dress up, you know, you don't have to dress up, but you know, it's
like
a little more eclectic. You want to, you know, go into your like resort wear atmosphere. It's a lot of fun. And at nighttime, especially at sunset, it's
you can see the Times Square ball right there. You can see that off the view.
Nobody knows. Not many people know that. You actually get to see the ball drop. So New Year's Eve for sure is definitely going to be a place to be. Because we have 2 floors where you can literally see the ball drop and stand outside.
And it's eye level.
Eye level, exactly.
Once you're in there, you truly do get lost. It's such a unique and exciting experience. And then outside of those things, you also have, is it the Joe Merchant's the coffee shop, right?
Yeah, Joe Merchant's the coffee shop. And that's your typical grab and go. We have pastries brought in daily, bagels, cinnamon rolls. And eventually we will get into where we have sandwiches and pizzas. Within that same level, you do have the chill bar, which is the lobby bar for the hotel. And that does small bites as well. So it has flatbreads, same thing, tuna, sliders, wings, things like that. And that view is just as pretty. It's on the 7th floor and it actually has a Times Square view. You can sit outside, have cocktails, checking in. This is my second favorite place. In the morning, it's probably the best place to go to because most people can't get up to the 32nd floor.
Right.
But to be on that 7th floor in the morning and just, you know, let the birds chirp and before the honking starts, it's actually a nice place.
So within this complex, which is all glass and beautiful and interesting, this like menagerie of escapism and island culture, where is the kitchen? How are you getting this food around?
The kitchen's on the 3rd floor. So to put it in perspective, you basically have the kitchen is almost heart of the building. It's you would think it's, you know, right there in every single restaurant, but we actually share one kitchen for all concepts. So it's a pretty big kitchen. Most people that do come in are like, wow, this is a big kitchen for New York. But we do have 2 lines inside that kitchen. So it's on the 3rd floor. This Landshark is above it, and Margaritaville, it feeds straight to Margaritaville. So everybody has to run the stairs dropping off the food, but, you know, we do it. It's definitely engineered well. I'm surprised how well it is engineered.
If there's one thing about New York, people can run the stairs with full trays of food.
Listen, I say it every day. The first day I walked in, I'm like, oh my gosh, we're going to have to run all these stairs. And every day I'm like, thank God for the stairs, because I'm just getting more toned every single day I run up them.
when you've got food coming out of this kitchen, like, what's your process of organization? Like, how are tickets coming in? Like, what's the chef view look like?
You know, the most important thing is organization. You've got to have organization to run all five of these outlets. Everything's kind of, it's a moving part. It's a moving, constantly moving. And with everything going to a different location and not having a kitchen set on every floor where all the restaurants are, you have to be organized. You have to know, you know, where your team is at, where everybody is supposed to be, and making sure that everybody knows their job and what their job responsibilities are supposed to be. If you're not organized and you don't set that tone in the morning, it can go upside down real quick. Unfortunately, you know, prep is down in the bottom. So if you don't set yourself up for success, you know, even starting with the line cooks all the way to, you know, the supervisors and managers, one moment of not paying attention can cost you a trip downstairs that takes another 30 minutes. Like, right. It, you know, you just really have to be organized. And we have a great team. You know, the team that we have has really done a great, phenomenal job. They're all new to it. So like I said, you know, normally you have a chef that's been at an operation for quite some time and they start molding and building their team. Unfortunately, everybody was on ground fresh, they brand new. Everybody's is in the same game, starting the first game together. So with that, it was a little challenging at first, but a lot of people have risen up to the challenge and has done a phenomenal job getting this place to where it is right now, where we finally feel like a team. I mean, we've only been open for almost a little over a month, and you would feel like I've been working with them for years because they're starting to get how it's supposed to be. And, you know, everybody's such a hard worker. They're trying to do the best that they can do. And as long as we're organized and it's constant communication, it does well. We've been doing well so
far.
And
you do notice that as a guest in the dining room and at the bar, you can tell that people are genuinely happy to be working there. And if they're not, they're certainly putting on a great show because they seem to be having just as much fun as I was as a guest. So it was really, again, like when you're in New York, these are experiences that you can't just like have every day. And for anyone who's thinking, well, I don't like to go to Times Square because I'm a real New Yorker, like, you're not a real New Yorker unless you go to Times Square. Tourist stuff is fun because it's fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
Get in there and do it. So I have to ask, you know, with the fandom, did you feel a lot of pressure from the Jimmy Buffett fandom and from the amount of songs he has about food to include that when you were developing your menu?
Well, I think, you know, we all know, you know, Cheeseburger in Paradise, that's
had
a staple. It had to happen. Like, you're, no matter what, you have to put on the classics, you know, the Volcano Nacho, the cheeseburger, the Lava Shrimp. You know, those are all things that are staples within Margaritaville. We were able to kind of tie in different things within this menu due to the fact that we are in New York. It is a different concept, a different vision. So we did, you know, have to bring in a little bit of things that we were not normally going to have on a menu. We brought in the whole snapper. You know, we wanted to bring a little bit of the Caribbean into New York, but still keep it eclectic and nice versus just having the burgers and things like that. So we brought in the whole snapper, which is probably one of the top sellers that we have. It's a beautiful dish. Everybody loves it. It's fun to make. And, you know, not everywhere are you going to find a New York City whole snapper. And we get it locally. So, it, you know, makes it even better, you know, trying to support the local community here. And as well as, you know, bringing in filet, we've changed up. We brought a steam pot, you know, especially Land Shark. You know, it's supposed to be by the beach. That's what our vision is behind that concept. So with that, we brought in a steam pot, which has crab legs, clams, shrimp, potatoes, andouille. You know, that is a favorite. And a lot of people love enjoying eating that by the pool. And that's probably our number one seller, you know, that's not something on every other menu within the concept. And here we are about to roll it out nationwide because that's how big of a seller it has been.
So. Yeah, the Northeast is hot for that clam bake.
Yeah, and they love it. They love it. I love it too. So I'm all for the clam bake.
Real talk though, how many cheeseburgers are served in Paradise a week?
You know, in this beautiful Paradise, it is still going, but traditionally you'll sell about 40,000 cheeseburgers a week.
40,000?
Yep.
Oh my goodness. 40,000 cheeseburgers in Paradise. I believe it.
Yep. It's a bit, I mean, depending on what venues you can go to, it can be astronomically crazy. Like we did, we were just maybe 6 or 7 months ago, we ended up doing a segment in Pigeon Forge and they're like, how many pickles do you really sell? I'm like, do you want me to tell you how many gallons of pickles I've sold? It was like 47,000 gallons of pickles.
Wow.
That's a lot of gallons of pickles. A lot of pickle chips is what I talk about.
Well, it's lettuce and tomato, big kosher dill, Heinz 57. We got to have it.
They love it.
It's got to be like the song. I mean, the fandom is wild. How many cold draft beers do you think you're going with those burgers?
Oh, geez. You know, you would think the draft beer would be the biggest seller, but it's that margarita.
It's the margarita.
It's the margarita. I mean, you're talking ridiculous amount of Margaritaville. I mean, easily, like if I put all five concepts going into it, we're selling almost 20,000 margaritas. That's a lot of margaritas.
20,000 margaritas. I have to say, shout out to John at the Margaritaville bar. My bartender made a perfect margarita, and it sure was.
It was perfect. Yeah, he's perfect. He does great job.
Yay, John. So tell me a little bit more about how this property differs from others in the collection, because, you know, folks like to go to all of them. There's, I think, like 20 or something of them now, isn't there?
Yes. Quite a few. I mean, this concept is completely different than what I think any of us really envisioned it. I mean, well, they had a vision. So I think it is exactly what they envisioned. It's just to take a concept that is known for tropical oasis and bring it into, you know, Times Square, you have to be ready for that vision. It just can't happen overnight.
Right.
There went a lot of thought and process into designing the building and to getting it to where it is, to now conceptualizing it and having Margaritaville Times Square. You know, normally they're on the beach, they're in a tropical destination that's sunshine all the time. And they decided, you know, you have to take that concept bigger and bolder. And the best way to do it is to bring it into Times Square. You know, it is an island. It's not, you know, surrounded by the tropical beaches, but it is, you know, surrounded by water. And you just have to be ready for that boldness of just taking it on, you know, parrot heads, as they call it. They love everything. Anything to Margaritaville, you can put it almost anywhere. They're going to show up.
Absolutely.
They love it. And, you know, we love it as well.
I have some stats on the parrot heads, actually, as my father was a founding member of the Parrot Heads Club. It's three countries, 47 states, three Canadian provinces, with a membership of almost 28,000 active parrot head members, not just Jimmy Buffett fans, or fans of the music, or fans of the franchise, but people who are actively in a club, the Parrot Heads Club.
It's astonishing.
It's wild.
You know, it's awesome. I mean, you know, they help keep us alive. You know, they keep us going, and we're constantly trying to do things for them as well. But, you know, everybody, no matter where you've been, you pretty much everybody has heard the songs from Jimmy Buffett. You kind of know who Jimmy Buffett is one way or another. And to, you know, bring that into Times Square and kind of bring in a tropical, beachy, fun vibe atmosphere, I think is exactly what New York needed. To bring in the pool outside. I mean, it's just this whole nother vibe. You know, New York is such a fast paced environment, and we're trying to slow it down. You know, in life, we got to slow down. We got to enjoy it a little bit more. And I hope that, you know, when people come into Margaritaville, they feel that. They get a feel to slow down, enjoy, and, you know, sip a drink, take
just,
a, you know,
like,
just
goofy.
Enjoy life, enjoy with who you're with, and have fun with that.
As if the five restaurants wasn't enough, the 32 floors, the outside pool, this has got to be the only Margaritaville with a synagogue also, and a kosher kitchen.
It is.
Included within it.
Yes, it is.
Are you managing that process as well? Is that separate?
Right now, it's still in construction. Our owner decided to, you know, pay tribute to actually keeping the lease with the synagogue. And right now it's still under construction. And with it still being under construction, eventually it will reopen, and we want the congregation to welcome them back. Right now, they're still in the process of finishing the construction underground, but it will have a full kitchen and all that. It is separately managed, but you know, it's nothing like having a synagogue attached to it. It just opens up the doors for us longevity-wise to help out, and, you know, especially to support our local community.
You know, when you think about New York City and you think about negotiating your property, like to go so far out of their way to make sure that they were negotiating the building of the synagogue and the terrace and the kosher kitchen, I think that's such an testament to Soho Properties and to the ethos and the vibe behind Margaritaville being a fair and safe place for everyone, where you're just enjoying things because it just makes sense to do the right thing.
Absolutely. And we definitely did the right thing with, you know, keeping the synagogue and being able to have that, you know, underneath us. You know, it's a good thing.
It's a cool thing. No cheeseburgers down there probably, but we'll figure
something
else out.
None of our cheeseburgers for sure.
Like other Margaritavilles have the erupting volcano or a spa or a zip line, you've got the 6th floor pool, and you've also got a light show.
Yes.
Can you tell me about the light show?
The Statue of Liberty is actually holding a margarita. And it's pretty much like cheersing off to 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's cheersing off, and that light show goes off every hour on the hour. And it's pretty much just an awesome light show. You have to come check it out. It's too hard to explain because it's one of those ones you just need to see what it does.
Well, I want to ask a little bit more about the development of the menu, because you do have such a strong background in developing these flavors and you have such a strong personality when it comes to your food. Margaritaville also published a cookbook by Julia Tertian and Chef Carlo. Was there pressure to include their recipes and the hyper signature dishes, or was it mostly like, hey, y'all kind of got to do these hyper signature dishes that everybody loves, but then you have a ton of freedom on the other side?
You know, most of it was, you know, we knew what we have to bring, which is the cheeseburger in paradise. You know, those are staples. I don't think there was much pressure at all as far as going into the cookbook. We do have some phenomenal corporate chefs within our establishment that spent endless time and hours trying to figure out what this market would entail and what does it need to do to make it completely different than the other Margaritavilles, but still keeping some mm-hmm. of our signature dishes. And Chef Dan did an amazing job, you know, honing into that and making sure that although we are in a more eclectic area, we still have to hone into what our true value is. And that is the cheeseburgers, the fish and chips, and right. the shrimp, the volcano nachos. I mean, those are our staples, and that's who we are. So, you know, you want to keep those staples, but you also want to be creative and kind of, you know, broaden out your menu to kind of suit everything. And they did a phenomenal job with
that. Yeah, and like you said, you do the local snapper dish. Mm-hmm. Is there any other local stuff or fun things you've been exploring food-wise since getting to New York City?
You know, we've started to dabble into a few things that I can't mention yet, but they are soon to be coming to the rooftop deck. We're going to kind of take another spin on the menu and kind of revamping that. We are doing some menu tweaking to see what people are enjoying within New York, and they are coming, but I just
all
can't
right.
dabble
so
into
some more
them.
City
there
stuff coming soon.
There are some secrets coming soon.
So you as a person, though, now living in New York City, working in the Times Square, have you had a chance to get out and go out to dinner anywhere here? Have you found like a favorite?
My main focus since I've been here is getting this big steamship rolling.
Right.
So unfortunately, we joke about all the time. It's like, what have you gone out anywhere? Unfortunately, no. I do spend most of the time there. But, you know, for this to be successful, that's what it takes. And, you know, we kind of need to focus on this, running this and getting this operation going. I have dabbled out, you know, a little bit within Times Square. I'm loving, you know, little Chinatown and Asian markets and stuff like that. My secret passion is Asian, so I love Asian influence. So a lot of noodle bars whenever I get a chance to.
The best.
And in the next 6 months, you ask me that, I promise I'll have some good answers for you.
Well, I'll definitely be calling and finding out. If you need any help with recommendations, I mean, Cherry Bomb has a few.
Perfect. I would take them.
So with the success of Margaritaville and this project just erupting right now, are you even taking time to think about the future? Is it really about being hyper-present? Like, where do you see this type of cuisine, this type of experience going?
You know, I sit there every once in a while when I'm on the 32nd deck and I'm like, you know, to finally be here, you mm-hmm. know, this has been an operation that has been trying to get going for so long. And to finally, you know, the ground broke, we're opened, everything's finally, the moving parts are started, are finally here. Like we finally reached it. I remember when I first started with them back in August of last year, and actually today is my 1 year with the company.
Oh, congratulations.
So it's kind of like funny that here I'm doing an interview about it. So, you know, a year ago, I never thought, you know, you couldn't ever see the vision of it finally getting open because, you know, with COVID, unfortunately, that put a lot of things and stopped a lot of things. Once I got to New York and we finally got in the building and they handed over basically the keys to us, it's like, we're finally here. Now it's time to like, let's get this thing going. Like, we've got to get this place open. And now that it's finally open, it's like, we did it. We finally did it. And what's next after this? You know, this is just the groundbreaking for what IMC and Margaritaville are going to do. I think there's many more resorts that are going to be opening, you know, in the same type of venue, same type of concept, big, bold, and, you know, different than what we're used to. So, you know, I see a lot of traveling in the near future. You know, once this gets going, I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for growth within, you know, going overseas, you know, all over the United States. I just see a lot of openings soon to happen.
For a lot of chefs, there's the in-house experience, and then there's some of the ambitions they have in building a culinary profile for them as a culinary personality. Are there any competitions or festivals or shows and stuff you'd love to do? Is that something you're thinking about?
Well, for sure, as far as cooking competitions, I mean, back in Florida, where I came from, we used to do a lot of them. I'm all for like barbecue, chili cook-offs, anything that's like that. Like, I love the competitive aspect of that and getting to do your own thing and your own twist. As far as like TV shows, my inspiration truly is Chef's Table. If you've ever seen it, I mean, some of those chefs are just breathtaking, mind-blowing, the things that they are able to accomplish and that they do with the food. Things that I inspire to do. I'm like, on my spare time, like, that's what I want to do, is kind of relive those. I love going to like fine dining, bougie restaurants just to look at the food and see what the chefs are doing. My favorite is either Victoria Albert's in Florida or Alinea in Chicago. So
that's a nice one.
Yeah. So that's where I like to kind of dabble into. Although I don't can't do anything as fancy as they can do. That's just where my passion is.
Sometimes it's just fun to watch other people be awesome at
it
their
is.
Thing.
Exactly.
Right? I think that's the best part about the culinary industry is we can all be good at our thing and then be so excited for someone else's good.
Absolutely.
Like, just like
mind blowing. You have to root them on.
Yep.
You have to root the other one on. You know, if you can't do it, let them do it and they do it well and I'll enjoy what they're doing.
Yeah. You have to like get hospitality is like one of the few industries where the give and take is so 50-50. Like you want to take care of somebody when they come to your place and they want to take care of you when you go to theirs. And it's just like this beautiful little ecosystem that I wish we could set the rest of the world by.
Absolutely.
Okay, it is now time for the speed round. I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. Don't think about it. Just throw out what your gut reaction answer is.
Okay.
All right, here we go, chef. What is the most underappreciated spice in the pantry?
Cumin.
Cumin. I love that. Do you cook at home?
No.
No. Good. What's your most requested dish?
Barbecue ribs.
Barbecue ribs. Is there anything that you just won't eat?
It used to be cow tongue until my better half just made me eat tacos and without me knowing. And it was actually phenomenal. So now I can't say no. So
lingua lover.
That's it.
We're in.
Yep.
Is there anyone in your family who thinks they can outcook you?
My dad, 100%.
Can he?
Probably on some things. He did teach me how to do all the grills. So he's a master of the Weber grill.
Okay, Weber dad. If you could have dinner with one person, dead or alive, who would it be?
Gordon Ramsay.
That'd be a good one. Is there a dish from your past that you wish you could have just one more time?
My mother's pork chops. Country fried pork chops.
Okay. Very divisive question coming your way. What is your favorite Jimmy Buffett song?
Bama Breeze.
Bama Breeze.
It reminds me of like being in Key West when I turned 21 down there, but it's completely not about Key West. It's just, it hones into my spirit of being in Key West, being young. That's it. I love that song.
I love it. And is a hot dog a sandwich or no?
It's a sandwich.
It's a sandwich. I'm saying
it is
it's a sandwich.
Sandwich.
It's meat and bun.
Yes.
Condiments. So, Chef Natalie, I am so grateful that you were here with me today and we got to talk about Margaritaville and what Caribbean food is looking like and Times Square. I have said that Jimmy Buffett is the fascia, the connective tissue holding millennial children to their boomer dads. We could just put on Cheeseburger in Paradise and put all of our other troubles aside. I very much look forward to booking a vacation to Margaritaville Times Square, bringing my dad in and just escaping everything that's been going on post-pandemic, during the pandemic. And I very much look forward to another Cheeseburger in Paradise at your restaurant.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here. And I'm glad to get a, you know, explain to New York and the fellow ladies out there, you know, a little bit about me and, you know, what Margaritaville has to offer. And, you know, we're glad to be here. We're glad to, you know, give New York a little escapism and not so much honking. Listen to Jimmy Buffett, enjoy, drink a Margaritaville.
Less honking, more perfect margaritas.
Absolutely.
I'll take it.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Natalie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much to Chef Natalie Cohey, the executive chef at Margaritaville in Times Square. It has been an absolute blast filling in for Carrie. And while this is my last show for a little while, I'll hopefully be back in the future. Radio Cherry Bomb is a production of Cherry Bomb Magazine. Want some more Cherry Bomb in your life? Sign up for our newsletter at cherrybomb.com. Love this episode? You can find Radio Cherry Bomb interviews with other cool chefs, including Deborah Von Treese and Claudia Fleming, wherever you get your podcasts. Radio Cherry Bomb is recorded at Newsstand Studios at Rockefeller Center in New York City. Thank you to Joe Hazen, studio engineer for Newsstand Studios, and our assistant producer, Jenna Sadu. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.